So, you're all in here to hear about viruses. Does everybody know what a virus is? And the differences between a virus and a worm and things like that. So, a virus is infected on your computer by something you've done. You open up a PDF. You've been infected. It's something you have. You've opened up an email and run a program. You've downloaded something and run a program. You've pulled something off BitTorrent and it was infected with a virus. You installed software from a CD that you got from the manufacturer and it contained a virus. That the Da Vinci virus in the early 90s infected absolutely everything. You could not buy a piece of software in the store that did not have it on it. It was pretty nasty. But I want you to think about this. There's one thing that you can take away from your computer and you will never get a virus. One thing you can take away. Does anybody know what that one thing is?
Hard drive. Network connection.
No? Not the hard drive? No?
It's the virus scanner. It's the virus.
Virus scanner.
No?
Me.
Exactly. The user. The virus, a virus is caused by a user doing something. If the user never does anything to a machine, it won't get a virus. Now, there are things that will get on your machine because there are exploits on the machine. Those are not viruses. Now, we'll talk a little bit about those too. There are things like worms using exploits to get around the internet and on the machines. Those are separate. They're a little bit harder to track down. Most virus scanners don't pick those up until later anyway. There are different types of viruses, polymorph. I don't want to go into all the details about virus. I want to go more into what you can do to protect yourself. There's lots and lots of information about viruses online you can look up. So now we know what the problem is. The problem is us. So what everything needs to revolve around is us looking at a virus scanner. So let's look at, or when looking at how you do things with your computer. So let's look at the virus scanner. I want you, now we're going to compare having a virus scanner on your machine to not having a virus scanner on your machine. Okay? So having a virus scanner on your machine, there's a it will find viruses when you do things wrong. Well, we can change our habits and we can do a few things on the computer to fix that. And it takes away about between 20 and 80% of the performance of the machine. This is the whole reason you should never run a virus scanner. When you run the virus scanner, it loads into memory and it scans everything you do. Every time you connect to the network, every time you look at the hard drive, every time you access your memory, it scans it. That takes up a lot of CPU. If you ever notice while you use your computer how fast it is before you install the virus scanner, this is the whole problem with virus scanners, and it's not just one. Every scanner you can list, McAfee, Dr. Solomon, every single thing does the same thing. Now, that being said, if you turn off the actual scanning parts of it, a scanner can be okay if you have a problem. So if your virus, if your computer isn't running a virus scanner regularly and you run it by hand and you know you're going to run it, this is fine. The problem with virus scanners now is they run constantly. They run all the time on your computer and you literally 20 to 80% of your performance is lost. All that time you wait for things to load, you sit, and I've seen literally people go and they'll click on something on their computer and then go make dinner and come back and click on something else and then go do a project and come back. And they think, oh, this is normal for using a computer. It's not. Computers weren't made to do all of these things. So the question is now, how do we solve this? Now, I went through this the last time. I did a lot of theory. This time I've actually got a copy of Windows 7 I installed this morning, so it's a clean copy completely, and we're going to go through a few simple things. The first thing I want to go through is the most basic way of keeping viruses off your computer. without using the virus scanner, and it's just your habits. When you get email from someone you don't know, or you get email with an executable in it, or something that looks fishy that you don't usually get from someone, don't open it. Even if you do get something you know is right, check it. There are lots and lots of ways of checking things. Open it up in Notepad first. If it's supposed to be a text file, you open it up, you take it and you put it in Notepad first, and it shows up with a bunch of gobbledygook. It might not be a text file. They might be hiding the extension from you. They might be doing something nefarious. You can use checksums, MD5 checksums, SHA checksums to check software. But don't open anything, don't run anything, don't open anything unless you know its source. This is the most basic thing you can do. When you go to websites or go searching for things that you know might be a little bit fishy, you're looking up some of the Metasploit, some new Metasploit plugin or something that that you know the people who are on the other end might not be doing something on the up and up. Be smart about it. Run in a virtual machine, which I'm going to show you how that works and how to do that. Virtual machines are absolutely great. I highly suggest using them, and I'm going to show you how to use them. This machine doesn't have the virtualization chip on it, but I'm going to talk a little bit about that and why it's so cool. It's one of the best pieces of technology to hit the CPUs in a while. So change your habits. This is the most basic thing. This will get rid of 90% of the problems. Number two, don't use the admin user anymore. The problem is you. If you take away all the rights that you have, then you can't do anything wrong. Well, you can do things wrong, but it's more difficult to do. So anything that you click on or you run or anything like that is going to be within the same security cage that you've set for your user. There are some exceptions, unless there's an exploit or things like that, and then once you start talking about exploits, you stop talking about viruses. They now become something else, worms or something along those lines. But for viruses, as long as your user doesn't have rights to it, your software doesn't have rights to it. So you're treating yourself knowing that you're the problem. So if you're the problem, you put yourself in a cage, then anything you do has to stay within that cage. This will allow you not to run the virus scanner, be secure about what you do and what you browse, and go and do the things you want to do. There are things, one of the things you're going to take away is your rights to run software. Or your rights to install software, I'm sorry. This is really important. This is the most important thing about putting yourself inside the cage, because this is what the virus is going to want to do. It's going to want to run software on your machine. So we can go over this real quick. So this is a fresh install. I've just installed a couple little things on it, but it's a Windows 7 install. By default, I have one user. It's an administrative user. How many of you run Windows 7? How many of you run XP? Vista or ME or the like? Anybody still on 98? Or 95? Anybody on 3.11? DOS 5. I keep going. DOS is a nice OS, as long as you don't want to use the network. It's a pain to use network drivers.
I run 3.1 for my email. Mm-hmm.
3.1 was a nice operating system. It's actually it's more used than most people think. It was the most secure operating system that Microsoft ever came out with. And it is still supported by Microsoft simply because a lot of government locations use it because it was such a secure operating system. But part of that was because networking was so difficult to use on 3.11. But as you can see in the default install, the only user here is me. By the way, I may fumble around with this a little bit. The reason why is 99% of the time I use Unix or Linux. I'm not a huge Microsoft person. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how to do this in Unix and Linux, but chances are, once I give you the concepts for those, if you use it, you're going to know how to lock yourself down. Take away the executable bit. I mean, that's about it.
Is any of this applicable to Macs?
Yes, absolutely. This is actually applicable to any operating system that has users. Well, no, DOS doesn't. You don't have a user with DOS. Any of the modern operating systems, this will go through. If you have users, you have user rights, basic AAA security from the Rainbow Book is what this comes from. I mean, this was a security model that was developed in the 1970s, I believe, was when the Rainbow series was written. And then it holds today, and everybody comes out with these new models and then finds out they don't work. The base security model, as long as it's based on that, there hasn't been anything written that can really change your base functions. So we're going back to basics. Take away the rights from the users. The users are the problem. So as you can see, I've got an admin and a guest, and I'm going to keep this pretty simple. I'm not going to do, you can go in and edit the registry and take things away, but we're not going to do any of that. All we're going to do is keeping it really simple. I'm going to create a new account. By the way, I go by HugMe. And I'm going to give that account, is going to be a standard user. So not an administrator. Create account. Okay, now that user needs a password. Let's do a simple one. Your password hint. I have levels of passwords that I keep in my head. I have about 25 different passwords that I keep in my head. They all have different levels. I kind of like this password hint because I do this. This is a level 0 password. This is my, I don't care who sees this password. a lot of people have this, but I can look at level 0 and know exactly which password I used. I never put anything that actually links that to the password. Level 0, if I put level 3 there, you'd never know what the password was. I mean, level 3, my level 3 is 12 random bits or random digits. Level 3 wouldn't tell you anything even close to let you guess that. That's really important. I've seen people put their actual password under password hint. So, you'd be amazed at what some users do. Off on a quick rant. You all know what DEF CON is? DEF CON's one of the largest hacking conventions. It probably is the largest hacking convention in the country. I went in 99 and stayed at the Hard Rock Cafe across the street. When I went, that Hard Rock, it's no longer there. They've moved it. But I asked, there was something behind the, when I checked into my hotel, there was something behind the woman who was checking me in, and I asked her to, can you look at something or another for me? She turns around so she wasn't facing or looking at me anymore, and when she did, I leaned forward and looked at her monitor. Every password that she used was written on her monitor. No, it was a piece of cut, she'd taken a piece of notebook paper and cut a little strip and written them all down and then taped them to the front of the monitor. Yeah, I just remembered the first four and then went and asked the manager if he knew there was a convention going on across the street, and he probably wanted to change that. I've seen some crazy things that people have done with their passwords, But this is one of the things that I just wanted to mention. So there's my password, create. I've already changed it. So now I've created another user. All right, so when I log out, I will have two users. I have HugMe Admin. This is my administrative user, and I have HugMe. When I use this machine, I use HugMe all the time. If I need to install a piece of software, I log out, I log into HugMe Admin, I install the software. After I've checked it, however I've happened to check that piece, I then log back out of HugMe Admin, and I stop using it. I'll only use it for a few minutes at a time, just to put on something I want to use. So now, I have this new user. Oh, just got to set up my desktop. That won't be allowed to install software. If I'm not allowed to install software, nothing else I use is allowed to install software. This is the basic concept behind not having to use a virus scanner. Instead of scanning for a virus, which is a reactive, you are waiting for a virus to come to you. You're waiting on something, you to download something or do something wrong. The virus comes to you, and then you have to react to it. In this case, your computer stops it from happening. It doesn't matter if the virus comes to you. Now, when I go in and try to install a piece of software, I did want to grab a few viruses, but I have a 1.5-year-old who's keeping me a little busy right now. So I'm going to go in and try to install Foxit. There we go. It's now going to ask me for a password. If I open up a text file and it asks me for a password, I know something's wrong. The password part on this is a new Windows 7 thing. XP didn't do this. With XP, you had to actually log out and log back in. With Windows 7, I can type in a password and run it as the admin user. I don't use this. The reason why is I want to run things as an admin user. I don't want to go through my user account to do it. There's a few little weird things that can happen with that, with the way this functionality works. You can also go in and your UAC disable it. Like I said, this is a base install. To do that, you need to go in the registry and edit it. Not really for everybody. I don't suggest you do that unless you're really knowledgeable.
There should be a GUI button to do so right at the user
interface. Have they added that?
There is.
Seven.
Okay.
Yeah.
Seven there is, and they changed UAC that even if you're running as an administrator, it will only prompt you for any action that did not come from your direct mouse click. That is,
okay.
If you click on a PDF, and if a JavaScript runs to install something, UAC pops up.
Okay.
They also changed the UAC. It basically runs the same way as Windows XP Run As. If you do a Run As or a UAC just like that, It temporarily logs in your account, runs that process as the admin account, not as the user.
Right, which I don't like. In the case of Linux, this is a sudo function.
Yeah.
When I install Linux, guess what I delete off the machine? Sudo. It's the same general thing, and I don't care for sudo. There's a whole philosophy behind there. You use the permissions of Linux the way they're supposed to be used. You don't need sudo.
Sadly, in the world of tech support, sudo and run as is required.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know, and it makes me sick that it's one of those things. Yeah, it's one of those things that the guy who wrote it didn't understand how permissions were supposed to work, and they wanted to make it easy and not secure. So, what you had a question?
Do,
Real quick, is it purely a philosophical standpoint that you have on not using sudo or sudo and in the prompt, or is there actually a technical security reason behind that?
Yes. Once you start using sudo, if you start using it on servers, and you go through and you look at your sudoers file, chances are, unless someone has meticulously gone in there and made it so that they can only run what they're supposed to run when they're supposed to run it and things like that, I have never seen a sudoers file set up like that.
Okay,
they do allow all.
My company is looking to switch from using SU to sudo for various purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were actually looking at if there are any security implications.
Come by afterwards, I'll give you my card. I'll be glad to talk to him about it.
Basically, you're repeating the same problem where any child threads, processes, software, permissions.
Yes. When you use sudo, you're running as root. Every user is running as root, no matter what you're running. You have to put forth so much effort to locking it down, it's no longer worth it. You'll have to hire 20 full-time people. People don't do that. So they do allow all for sudo. And I've never, ever seen, I've seen thousands of sudo installations, never seen anybody actually do it the way it should have been done. So, yeah. So it's going to now stop me from installing. If there was a virus on this program, it would have let me know. If I was opening up a text file, which I said I wanted to actually show you a text file that did this, but it would actually have stopped me and let me know there was something wrong. And then I'll log out and I'll log into my admin and install it from there. This is the most basic. The next thing I want to talk about is virtual machines. Have any of you ever used a virtual machine? Okay, a few of you. Does anyone not know what a virtual machine is? Okay. So imagine a computer as a big box, and all your software and everything are little gizmos that you put inside the box. A virtual machine is like taking a smaller box and putting it in that box, and then putting your gizmos in there. So to get to your smaller box, you have to go through your bigger box, or you can attach the smaller box to the outside. But the smaller box always runs within the bigger outside box. And if you're inside the smaller box, you don't necessarily know that the bigger box exists. Kind of like the Matrix. So you're stuck in the smaller box that you think is a real computer that you're using and things like that. But you're actually running yourself inside, you're running inside this larger operating system that pretty much controls everything. You don't know it. This was really cool technology, and it's been around for quite a while. A few years ago, some of the CPU manufacturers said, wow, this is really neat, but I think we can expand on this. And they put in a separate processor inside the CPU that handles all of the virtualization. So before, where you had a chip that was having to handle all of your operating system and a secondary operating system on top of that, was really getting clogged down. So now you handle the top operating system, but you put that off to the side, and then all the communications, all of the things that are handled with the virtualization, you put on a completely separate part of the processor. They did a really good job of implementing this. So good, in fact, that some things that you can run inside the virtualization run faster as a virtualized machine than as a real machine. Some of the web servers will do this. They'll actually run faster virtualized than non-virtualized. You also have complete control over it. You have control over how much memory the virtualized machine uses. You can shut down and restart a virtual machine in a matter of a few seconds. I have web servers that can feed 100,000 hits on a regular basis every second. I can shut one of those down and bring it back up in 15 seconds. You can't do that on a piece of hardware. that's not possible. But on a virtual machine, it absolutely is. If you add things like Kickstart, which is a program that allows you to install another machine very quickly, we've got a new database set up that I've been working on where we are deleting a virtual machine, reinstalling the operating system, and bringing a database back up in a matter of 30 minutes, and then rotating our master slave around.
That database is
SQL? Postgres. So some of the new Postgres stuff is really cool too. But I'm going to show you a virtual machine. Now, when it comes to security, this gets really cool. So imagine you add things like snapshots. So imagine running something inside a virtual machine and getting a virus. Well, the virus doesn't even know it's on a virtual machine. You can trash the virtual machine as much as you want, and then a half hour later you have a full copy of your machine again. In fact, you can go ahead and copy your machine, so you take the file, make a copy of it, run it off the virtual machine, do whatever you want to it, do whatever testing, download whatever viruses, install whatever you want to with it, then delete it and use your copy of it. So in Windows 7, there's a few things you'll have to download and install, which I did this morning. Hold, I believe, there's an XP piece. When you go to Windows, just go to Google, type in virtual PC, which is the name of the software. There are two programs you need to install. This is one of them, SSV Windows. No, that's not. That's my Android app. I don't even see them on here anymore. I may have deleted them. But there are two separate things you need to install. One of them is half a gig in size. So if you're running on a 14.4 dial-up modem, probably not a good idea. You might want to download it somewhere else and bring it over. But when you install them, let me show you what they look like. Windows Virtual PC. Virtual PC. And could have sworn I had some in here. XP mode. This is it. No, you have to do... The reason why I'm doing this, this computer does not have the virtualization chip on it, and so I have to run an XP version of it, which doesn't require the virtual chip. A lot of the virtual PC now requires a virtual chip, but this way it doesn't require it. So I am at this point creating a new virtual machine. No, I don't want it to... It's actually installing a copy of XP for me. The license comes under my Windows 7 license. So this is not... You don't have to buy a new copy of an operating system. You have to download the two pieces. One of them is this XP mode. So Windows XP mode and Virtual PC. Download the two of those, install them, and then you can start using the Virtual PC.
The caveat is for those who are dabbling, Windows 7 Home Edition and below do not have XP mode available. Windows 7 Pro and up.
I thought you could still, I thought the download, after you downloaded it, still worked.
That made it work.
I haven't looked into that, but by default, you know, what the operating system can do, it cannot do XP mode the same way it cannot do remote
Well, this isn't actually XP mode. This isn't the thing that you right-click on and do Windows XP mode. This XP mode is an actual application.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The actual XP mode virtual machine, not compatible.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, get a Pro or
Okay. Yeah, this is Ultimate, so.
Yeah.
This is I had to buy a TechNet subscription to test a bunch of stuff, so whatever I need. Once I install this, I'm going to have my matrix. I'm going to have my box inside the box. If I'm going to a website that I think is nefarious, I'm going to use this. I can delete it and reinstall another one. I mean, I'm installing an operating system right now. I'm installing a copy of XP. Nothing from here can touch my operating system, my copies of Windows 7. When I say nothing, I mean no virus, no exploit, nothing can touch my operating system. There could possibly in the future be an exploit that does, but it would have to be a very well-crafted one. Because you can't tell, you won't be able to tell that this is a virtual PC. It'll look just like XP. These are great. This is the absolute best way currently to keep yourself from getting a virus on your main machine, running inside a virtual PC. Now, when I do virtual PCs, my base operating system is not Windows 7. It is Linux. There are some free technologies with Linux, specifically Xen. Xen is the most common currently. However, a lot of the Linux distros are replacing it with KVM by default. I have a love-hate relationship with both of them. They both have their good points. They both have their bad points. The thing I don't like the most about KVM is it uses XML files instead of text files. So if you have exactly the same file that I wrote that was 5 lines long to start a virtual machine, that same file is now 60 lines. Don't really care for that part of it, but they're both very good technologies. A lot of the things that Xen was lacking, the newer version of it actually has. You can also use VirtualBox. VirtualBox is something developed by Sun, which is now Oracle. Absolutely great piece of software. There's a free version of it. Free version of it is lacking a couple little things. There's some USB things you can't do with it. There's a pay version too. The pay version has a lot of support. I believe VirtualBox is the only one that you can run 3D graphics inside a virtual machine. You can, if you have a card with 3D graphics, you can actually attach to that card and run full 3D graphics inside of it. And you can do, I can have a Linux as my base, put Windows on top of it, run 3D graphics, and run a full-blown game that you'll never know that Linux is my base. It's pretty cool. VMware is a pay one. But they have been doing this for a long, long time, and they do a very good job of it. They did. I haven't looked for a while. Yeah, they used to have one. I think they discontinued that. It used to only be free. All they had was a free one. Then they had a pay one, and now I believe it's only the pay one that they have. So that's a copy of Windows XP running inside Windows 7. I can do anything I want to with this operating system. I don't have an internet. I didn't hook up to the internet connection, but it runs a browser. It looks just like a copy of XP. If I go in and look at the hardware on it, it actually shows the hardware on the computer. Hardware device manager. This is going to run a little sluggish because I don't have virtualization technology on this CPU. But this is the same stuff that's on my regular machine. I wish there was some simple way I could tell you to do that. However, the only way I've been able to find to do it is to go online. Go to Intel or AMD's website, look up the exact model number of the processor you have, and it will say it'll have all the processors across the top and then all the functions they could possibly have, and one of them will be virtualization. It'll have yes, no, 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 yes, yes, yes. And you just look and get that chip. Maybe. That's not quite. This is a Core 2.
That's Core 2?
Yes, no virtualization. Yeah. yeah. The i7s after a certain generation does, but not all the i7s do. Because I have a Dell D900. Matter of fact, I have four of them in production at work now that do not have virtualization. Yeah. Yeah. And then
What about Mac?
Mac, I believe VirtualBox runs on a Mac. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure VirtualBox runs on a Mac. Yeah, go. Yes.
VMware version for specifically for the Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Zen runs on a Mac too, does it not? And Mac is fully free. None of it is cost. Yeah, so Zen, and there is, and people get this confused all the time. There's Zen, and there's Citrix Zen. They are completely different from each other. Citrix Zen is a piece of software that does virtualization made by the company Citrix. Zen is the open source version of an open source virtualization project. The two of them was not the same programmers, was not there, they have nothing to do with each other. but yeah, everybody gets that mixed up. There is, if you are running virtualization on an Intel processor, you might want to turn off hyper-threading. This is something I just discovered about 2 months ago. When you use... this gets a little bit advanced. So inside your CPU, you know you have multiple cores now. With AMD, you'll buy a processor and it'll have 6 cores in it. With Intel, you'll buy a processor and let's say it has 2 cores in it. Each of those cores has 2 threads. Think of the thread as the part that actually does the math inside it. Well, the 2 threads share parts of those cores. They're not true separate parts. So they share their memory that holds the things before they get processed. They share some of the little processors like the floating point processor and some of the little functions. Hyperthreading allows you to run processes in each thread instead of in each core. So you can treat them like when you buy 2 processors, it looks like you have 4 processors in it, when you actually have 2 cores and 4 threads. This can increase the performance of your machine by about 60%. It's pretty decent. When you run virtualization, however, it thinks you have multiple processors, but it doesn't know that they're actually not multiple processors. So it tries to run things on top of each other inside the memory and mixes things up a little bit, and you lose performance. So if you have Intel and you turn on virtualization, turn off hyperthreading, you'll see better performance. Little bit of an advanced tip, but something you should keep in mind. Does anybody have any questions about this so far?
Does the virtual machine and host machine share the MAC address and IP address for the system?
A very good question. No, they do not. There are a few ways this can happen. One of them is for the real machine to act like a hub or a switch. So the virtual machine doesn't have a real network card. It will get DHCP from your real machine, and that's the MAC address and IP address that it has. So every time it talks, it has to talk through the real machine to get to the outside world. It can also, the real machine can have a virtual card that it hands it that maps to the real card. In this case, you give the real machine gives the MAC address to the virtual machine, but the virtual machine talks directly to the card. Believe it or not, MAC addresses can be changed. I know people will tell you over and over again, your MAC address is in the hardware of the, and it can't be changed. It talks layer one. That's not true.
As long as you don't have the same MAC address, the same LAN, you're golden.
Yes. And with virtual machines, this happens more often than you'd think. You go through and you copy two virtual machines, one to another, and you don't think, oh, I've got to change the MAC address. And you end up with multiple MAC addresses on the same LAN. I've done this more than once.
Well, how do you do that? I mean, you just make up a number?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, you make up your own MAC address, whatever you want it to be.
And then the same manufacturer, and just add
No, you can be.
Most virtual machines start with the number 000, 000, 001.
Yeah. My cable modem at home, if Comcast ever looks up my MAC address, it's 00000Beefcake. I couldn't get a K, but yeah.
Well, on that note, let me ask you another question. Is it true that if you have two programs running in the VM, that you can have them communicating?
Can you have them communicating on two different virtual NICs?
Very good question. So let me expand on this a little, and I think it's what you're asking. So you're saying, yeah, I have two different virtual machines running on the same machine, and you want those two virtual machines to communicate. If you read most documentation, it will tell you that you have to go use the network card and talk back and forth. I'll tell you a secret, though, that you probably won't read in most of the documentation. Take your when you create your interfaces, if you're using Linux, I'm not quite sure how to do this in Windows. He might have a little more idea for the Windows side, but in Linux, you create your network cards and you hand them to the virtual machine. It's one little line, and VIF equals MAC address, and then you give it the name of a bridge, and your bridge is that connector between your virtual network card and your real network card. So what I did, and when I first started in this company, I just did this to see if it would work, and it does. It works really well. Instead of handing it the network card, I handed it the loopback adapter. Yeah. And so I've got a 127.0.0.3 and a 127.0.0.4. And I'm having them talk back and forth on the loopback adapter. Loopback adapters don't have speeds. It's however fast it goes in, that's how fast it comes out. So when these virtual machines talk to each other, they talk as if the network card were wide open. There was no speed talking back and forth to anything. And it's coming in about the speed of a 50 gig card.
All right.
Is what I've got it up to.
Thank you.
But yeah, it's a really neat trick to do. So, but I haven't seen anyone has documented anything about it. At some point, I'll get off my lazy butt and write the documentation myself, but right now I'm just passing it on to you.
I think on the Windows side, to the best of my memory, I used virtual machines 2 years ago. Best of my memory, they do allow making a virtual LAN, and your host machine acts as an NAT router to that virtual LAN.
So if you use VirtualBox instead of, this is the Microsoft software I'm using now. If you use VirtualBox, you have a lot better control over those network adapters. In fact, you can turn them on and off while the virtual machine is live. It's pretty cool to do. You can give them, take things to hard drives, and you can create CD-ROMs out of your ISOs. You just download an ISO, and instead of making a CD out of it, you just say, take this ISO and make it a CD-ROM on this virtual machine. And you no longer need to make CDs at all. Funny story about that, my last laptop, my CD-ROM had broken, and I didn't realize it for almost a year. because I had stopped using it. I used ISOs and just used the file image for everything. Yeah, the VirtualBox will definitely do it. One of the cool things about VirtualBox, it runs on Mac, it runs on Windows, it runs on Linux. Not only that, but if you create the image on Linux, you can take that file that's an image and put it on a Windows box and run it on VirtualBox on the Windows box. VirtualBox is the only virtualization software that does that. Once you create that image, it runs on any operating system that VirtualBox runs on, which is really cool. I have been able to pull a server out of production, put it on my laptop, boot it up, make changes to it, take it, tear it back down, move it back out to production, and boot it back up there again.
I like that.
Yeah. VirtualBox is pretty cool. Unfortunately, Oracle bought Sun, and so a lot of their really cool projects are going to the wayside. Open Solaris was one of them. ZFS was almost cried for that one. That was just sad. So, anybody else have questions?
I'm here to be preached to, but I just like to play devil's advocate in the sense that, obviously I haven't run virus software for a while because I know to look for executables, but
yeah.
To the layperson, that's hard. And additionally, even if you do test something in a virtual machine, it's not always evident to the user
right.
The viruses.
That's why I went over the first part. Were you here? Have you been here the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, for the first part, with creating the standard user instead of an admin user. And that's most people, that's what they're going to end up doing. And that will work as well as a virus scanner. If you think your virus scanners are going to catch every virus, you're way off. In fact,
go ahead.
Think of it this way. The way a virus scanner works is it takes a file and it scans it for what it knows to be a piece of code that is a virus. If you have a virus that has just come out, what's the chances that your virus scanner is going to find it? There are a few things that it can look for, such as null sleds, which are telling the CPU to do nothing, do nothing, do nothing, do nothing, do nothing, run this. Which, if I had a few more hours to speak, I'd explain why that's significant. But it takes a null sled and looks for things like that. The null sleds are used to take over your computer, for the virus to go in and take over something. It can look for that, but people who write viruses know that virus scanners look for that. They don't do exactly that in their software anymore. So the virus scanners just look for pieces of code. So you're no longer doing that. You're no longer being reactive to the viruses. You're being proactive. You're saying, I'm in this cage. If a virus comes in, I don't care what it looks like. I'm in a cage. It's going to be in the cage if I install it in the cage. Which is, yeah, why this is actually works better than a virus scanner.
Then you can dump the cage over a cliff and get a new cage.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is a question that he and I came up with, and outside of our professional lives, we're both heavy gamers, and games require the resources that the hardware can provide.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, virtual machines don't take full advantage of that nice Radeon or NVIDIA video card that you put in.
Right.
So, that being said, aside from going back to the standard user or power user, what virtual machines are out there that can take advantage of that?
If you need to be on the base hardware like that, which in the case of a game, you have to be on the base hardware. Like I said, VirtualBox will run 3D. It does not run it as fast as the base hardware. I guarantee that. Multi-boot. I just installed Windows 7 on here, so unfortunately, all of my if I reinstall the FreeBSD first boot partition, it would show that I have 4 operating systems on this machine. You can do that with any operating system. You can install 4 copies of Windows 7 on the machine. One of them will be your game one. Use that just for gaming. use one just for... I didn't want to get too much into that. That's a little more technical.
Okay. I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for a shortcut with the VMs that you were talking about.
Not for gaming.
Okay.
Gaming is, are resource hogs, and they will not take advantage of that virtualization chip.
And many of them require it.
Yeah. Yes.
You ever virtualize a DC domain controller using VMware?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, at work, I have a department who is just Windows, and they run all our PDCs and BDCs and stuff like that. Well, they'll come and ask me for a machine, and I'll say, log into this machine. Just, you know, remotely log in the remote desktop into it. What I'm handing them is a copy of Windows, what is it now, 2010? Yeah. Whatever the newest one is that's running on top of CentOS. And I will install it. I'll go through and pull the Windows thing and go through the little installation process on the virtual machine on CentOS, and then tell them to, once they get on it, I have no idea what kind of things they do, but I just hand it over to them. It runs great. Runs absolutely great. One of the things that I'm working on is I want to set up a laptop that runs Linux as the base OS and a virtual machine, but you never see the base OS. So Linux runs the domain controllers and all of that kind of stuff. So you're on a domain that you can't actually see. It exists on the computer, but you have no control over it. And so you boot up the laptop and you see Windows and you think you're in Windows, but you're actually in a virtual machine with Linux on top of it that you didn't even see during the boot up. And you're on a domain and you have, you know, I can run Snort on it, I can run whatever I want to, watch traffic, anything I want, but I'm within this Windows machine. The idea of this actually came out of my wife's parents, because we have so much trouble doing tech support for them. And no matter what they do with their machine now, I can go in and fix it. But coming up with that idea, I'm like, you know, this would be an actual really good tech idea, so.
Doug, you're jumping like...
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here as well, but...
Sure.
Is it possible to... if you set up a virtual machine, is it possible for some kind of virus to secretly install through, I don't know, some buffer overrun or something, just installs without you knowing it, and you're still using this virtual machine, and then it steals private information? So couldn't it still be dangerous to use a virtual machine in that sense, like a virtual virus stealing your information?
You're talking about the virus coming in and stealing information from the virtual machine or from the host machine?
From the virtual machine, because maybe you're using that for most of your stuff and you don't...
Yes.
You're not really careful. Or,
yes.
Or how would you guard against that? How would you even know if you had that virus on that virtual machine?
Still run your virus scans. Don't run the virus software. At the beginning I talked a little bit about this. So the scans are fine. You don't want to run the virus software as a constant thing. It's what really kills.
I got it.
Okay. It's what really kills your machine. You can also, now that you know how to set this user up, if you have private information and you're worried about something, you can set up multiple virtual machines. You can have one virtual machine that you don't install a network card on. This is what you have your taxes on. You can install another virtual machine, and you don't have to have them all running at the same time. You know, you bring up a virtual machine, no network card, no connection to anything. It's just to do your taxes, nothing else. You put your social security number on there and feel fairly safe. Then if you do that, I would not do anything with your host machine. I would use virtual machines for everything, because from your host machine, you can something can pull those virtual machines. They're huge, and you'd probably notice a latency in your network connection if they did it. You can also do that with users. you know, create several users. If you're a beginning user, you don't want to use virtual machines, create several users. That's even easier to do. The same steps I went to before. Create 5 different users. Huh?
Going back real quick to the, I think it was like 3 questions ago, he was talking about something about running as a alternate user, run as or something. My question was, how does, not running without a virus scanner, that was it. What if the user, the clickjacking and the drive-by downloads and those sorts of things, if you're not running a virus scanner that's watching for those things, how is the average user supposed to keep themselves from being subjected to those, I guess? Does the UAC pop-up prompt for running executable still come into play with that?
I'm not completely savvy with the Windows, how the Windows side works. But anything that it's going to install on your machine, it should prompt you for.
With the exception of browser extensions.
Yeah, so the browser should only be able to write to a few things. It should be able to write to your cache, your browser cache, your cookies, your sessions, things like that. It shouldn't be able to write to anything else. And if it does, the UAC will pop up.
I was primarily thinking of there was the incident with Twitter where if you even rolled over, it executes JavaScript or something. Yeah.
See, it only affected your virus, though, didn't it? I mean, it only affected your browser.
Right, but I guess so. What you're saying is that can't escape the browser.
Right.
Without it popping.
Right. Okay. So it will stay within your browser.
Expanding on his question about having separation of the data, is it possible, of course, to have 2 different NICs, virtual NICs, in your machine, and one of them go to a certain place like the internet, and the other one to go to like a printer network, and in theory, would that keep anybody from being able to come in on one network and get out on the other because it's on 2 different NICs?
As long as you don't have any addresses on your host. So for that to happen, your host machine has to be on both. One thing you can do is not put IP addresses on them. Turn them off. But bridge them over to your virtual machines and put the IP addresses on the virtual machines. So you'll have 2 virtual machines, one's on one network and one's on the other. And there won't be any way to cross those 2 networks across the virtual machines. The host machine has to have the NIC and has to know the NIC is there. But if it doesn't have any IP addresses, it can't actually use any of the data that goes through it.
All right, I have a question. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like, well, I'm not that computer savvy, but like, I plan on doing it later for a computer I'm going to get in the future.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere online that I can look up how to do everything that you just talked about today? Or
ooh. This is another one of those documentation things.
Yeah.
No one's actually...
Because this is my first
DragonCon,
I haven't
good...
come prepared.
Yeah.
The Lifehacker blog likes to give tips and tricks, exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They had an article
about drop your virus scanner. About a month ago, talking the exact same things you just did.
I wonder if they had shown up at the panel I did last year on this.
It's Lifehacker. It's part of the Gawker Media Group.
Take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. I think I might have something on this on my website, too, which is hugme.org.
Really?
Yeah, hugme.org. I think I've owned it since 94, 95, something like that, but yeah. Yeah, it was, I had 2 websites before that. My first website, I got one of the online free websites, and I got 2K of space that they let me put a website on.
Wow.
And then I switched from them to someone else because the other place gave me 12K. I was very happy. Does anybody else have any questions? Okay, great, because it is exactly 9:30 when the panel's supposed to end. Thank you.